26th, I think it is today. So in the heat of the growing season here, the midst of the summer. So let's start with a county roll call and see who all is in attendance today. So if you are in the northern half of the county or the state, please check in.
Scott Royce, Marinette.
Kim Miller, Winnebago.
Hey, I guess I'm kind of right in the middle here in Pierce.
Jill Botnick, Outagamie.
Hey, Jill in Outagamie. And who else in the southern part of the state then?
Sophie in Portage.
Melissa Seafelt in Marquette.
Christine Rock. Chrissy in Woolworth.
Barb in Kenosha.
And Weed in Waukesha.
Okay. Anybody else? I'm just trying to write down everybody's names here quickly. So, okay, well, let's start with some county reports then. I can start over here in the west, I guess. We have had kind of spotty rain. Some places are getting lots and other places are getting missed by the clouds. And so some of us are watering and others are cleaning up erosion issues. We're starting to see a lot of foliar fungal kinds of things popping up, lots of brown spots and curled leaves and things like that that I think are finally catching up with us. Lots of raspberry questions. We're pretty sure, Phil, we're about 85% sure that we've got spotted wing Drosophila here, but my little micro picture didn't quite show the tail end of these things well enough for him to say 100% sure. But so we've got spotted wing Drosophila, and I know Christelle's going to talk about that more, so that'll be great. And other raspberry problems because it's raspberry harvest season, so everybody's finding problems. Lots of questions about black flies, gnats being really bad yet, and I don't know if Phil is on today, but if so, if he can address why they're so bad would be great. And then otherwise, just a variety of other things, especially related to vegetables, wilting cucurbits and radishes that aren't forming bulbs and those kinds of things, so a wide variety of other things that way. So that's what's going on here. So how about if we pop over to Scott up in Marinette County?
Okay, yeah, the spottiness of rainfall is really exacerbated up in this neck of the woods. We've got some places where if you haven't been watering, stuff is literally just on death's doorstep. And other areas in southern Oconto and a few spots here and there where we are pretty wet. Because of the variation in moisture, we are seeing things all over the board. A couple of generalities, though, really high aphid populations this year, particularly the cottony alder aphid and a few other species, but that one is notable. In the vegetable and fruit areas, really high raspberry cane borer populations in some parts of the three counties I work in. Because of the humidity, cane and spur blight in raspberries is pretty bad in some areas as well. And in tomatoes and vine crops, we're seeing a lot of stem brittleness. And I think there's lots of different reasons causing that, but you know, along with that, squash bug and squash vine borer causing lots of problems in cucurbits. So plenty of stuff to stay busy. The other two things, black spot on roses is much worse than normal this year up our direction, as well as the leaf spots on the Prunus species.
Okay, thanks, Scott. How about Portage County, right smack in the center of the state?
We've had spotty rain. We've had, as far as bloom goes, we've had the roadside covered in Monarda, roughly sunflower and lead plant right now. As far as calls this week, I've had bat bugs, phylloxera, swarming bees, lots of aphids, and tomatoes that are setting seeds. Potatoes setting seeds. I did get one call from a grower in the next county over in Wood County who reported that she identified spotted wing Drosophila in her raspberries. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, now we're going south, and then I forget which counties are furthest north, but, well, how about Jill and Outagamie, I guess?
We've had a lot of insect calls, white flies, and rogue yellow jackets, a lot of problems with raspberries, and spider mites, and a lot of fungus, still a lot of fungus problems. It's spotty rain here, too. It looks like it's going to storm, and it sort of drizzles a little bit, and then it stops.
I guess that's July in Wisconsin, huh? Marquette County.
I had a couple of bug questions this week, and I actually had a personal encounter, first ever with a hornworm on my tomato plant, so that was a unique experience for me. Other than that, haven't gotten a lot of contact from people, just the kind of normal questions this time of year, the, you know, what to do about this or that.
Hey, sounds good. Waukesha County, Ann. Ann, are you there? Well, let's just go over to Winnebago County with Kim.
For weather, I can kind of say the same thing as Outagamie. It's been kind of hit and miss with the rain. For calls, honestly, they've been all over the board, but the majority of them have been dealing with trees. But once again, those calls are all over the board, too. We've had everything from crabapple rust to frost cracks and slime flux. You just name it, they're asking questions, thinning canopies. We're starting to see a little bit of different leaf spots and leaf rust. We had a sample yesterday with hollyhock rust. So, but not very many calls on vegetables, actually none so far on vegetables. And we've had some weed IDs and insect IDs.
Sounds good. Ann, are you for Waukesha County Report?
I have nothing to report. I've been cutting in and out of this right in the beginning here, so sorry.
Okay, how about Walworth County?
Good morning. I'm actually here in Rock County today visiting with Christy. I spent some time in the prairie the other day. There's purple prairie clover blooming, Turk's cap lily, bergamots, and the monardas are blooming, gray-headed coneflowers, and the sweet clovers. For vegetables, we had the questions on the squash vine borer coming in. I've seen potato beetles and some powdery mildews in the garden. Chicory is in blooming still, and Queen Anne's lace along the roadside. It's been fairly dry here. We have a little bit of spotty rain coming in today, but that's about all of that. The ground's pretty dry. Tree-wise, I think I'm seeing tar spots starting to come on the maple trees, which doesn't surprise me because we've had it pretty bad in the past. That's about all for Walworth County.
Anything to add for Rock County there?
Yeah, I've been getting actually a lot of calls about some pollinator problems and cucurbits. Just not producing fruit or rotting before they become full fruit. Actually, two or three phone calls, which is surprising to me. Some tar spots starting to show up on the maples as well. And then quite a few mushroom questions, especially on various mulches. Some fungal problems starting to come in. And about the same weather as everybody else is reporting. And lots of ailing ash trees that I'm noticing. Don't quite know why yet. I'm going to try to figure that out. So.
Okay. And Barb in Kenosha County.
Well, I'm going to have to say the same as a lot of other people. What would be different here is we are, I would say, 40% of our calls relate to emerald ash borer, and it's because it is so prevalent now in this county that everyone is noticing it. We've just announced this morning, and I know it can be made public, that we have a new confirmed site in Summers. So at this point, I think we have almost all of the municipalities where we've had confirmations of EAB. The others are kind of really weird across-the-board kinds of things, including I have a potential spotted wing Drosophila sample and raspberry sitting on my desk waiting for the adults to emerge. So otherwise, not anything that I would say would be any different than what I'm hearing from everybody else.
Okay, thanks. Has anybody else joined us since we did roll call?
Heidi jumped in here from St. Croix County.
Hey, Heidi, you want to give a report, your first report here for...
Yeah, I'd love to. Most of what I've been getting, actually a number of questions on dieback on conifers and evergreens, which may be related to the really dry summer we had last summer and people not watering. So they're just starting to notice it now, like, why are all my neighbors' evergreens dying and mine too? So we're seeing that. And then I haven't had any veggie questions at all, but I've had some fruit questions, small fruits, of course, the spotted-winged Drosophila, because I put some press out there on that in the last couple of days. So now I'm going to be getting a whole bunch of questions on that, I think, this week. And then some raspberry and grape disease questions and weed IDs is pretty much it up here so far. But, yeah, people are coming in and wondering what's going on in the garden, so that's good.
Hey, anybody else who joined us?
Hi, Diana. This is BJ from Brown County.
Hey, BJ.
It's been pretty pretty dry here, actually. We haven't received any rain this week. Hopefully this afternoon, we'll see about it. Most of the calls regarding to Japanese beetles are trickling down, but people are noticing actually some blossom end rots and tomatoes, zucchinis, and peppers. Powdery mildew questions have been coming in, mostly on pumpkins and squashes. We've been noticing quite a bit on brown rots, actually. People are noticing some of the cherries and plums are dying back, and the fruits have been infected by brown rot disease. Hawthorn rust is prevalent. Squash vine borer is also prevalent. People are also noticing a sudden maple dieback, too. We've still got some calls regarding to that. And some few questions on cane borers and raspberries. That's pretty much about it.
Hey, thanks. Anybody else?
Steve is on in La Crosse, and the only update I'd add is Japanese beetles are heavy here in the La Crosse area.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, then let's go on to specialist reports. I know Brian's on. I don't know. Phil, are you here today?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay. Well, who wants to go first?
Why don't I start off and get out of the way if that's okay?
Okay.
In terms of what I've been seeing in the clinic, verticillium wilt seems to be relatively active. Vijay, I just sent out a report to you on a catalpa that you had submitted that was positive. We're also seeing a variety of leaf diseases on oaks, anthracnose, tobacco leaf spot, monokesha leaf spot. These are all ones that we see routinely during the summer if we have a little bit of rain. Also some leaf blister, which is a Tephrina disease that we see on oaks that causes kind of a bubbling of the leaf surface. Ginkgos, we had one come in, and actually, we don't usually see a lot of disease problems. I think the primary problem with that tree was probably something in the root system, but they didn't send us roots, but we did find a little bit of a Pseudomonas leaf spot on that particular tree, which I see occasionally. It causes necrotic areas with yellow halos. A fair number of fruit crops coming in. I have to say this is the summer of fruit. Raspberries, blueberries, we did find some raspberry leaf spot, which is a cylindrosporium disease. It causes very discrete, very circular leaf spots on the leaf surface. They can be dense enough that it will cause some defoliation if it's really bad. Some gray mold problems on herbaceous ornamentals and anthracnose on Turk's cap lily, root rot on that particular plant as well. Probably the most interesting sample that I finished up this week was a Scots pine that came in from Sheboygan County. Just sent the letter out this morning. They had a lot of browning of older needles, and it appeared to be Cyclonusma needle cast, which we don't see a lot of. That particular fungus, Cyclonusma, in fact, in the fruiting bodies, if you look at them under the microscope, look like when they pop up through the leaf surface or the needle surface, they look like a pair of French doors opening. Very, very distinctive sort of look to those particular fruiting bodies. And then we've had some vegetable problems. Again, I've been hearing a lot about vegetables where the blossom ends are rotting, and I know there's some discussion about whether that's blossom end rot or the effects of poor pollination. I've actually seen a fair number of samples come in where I think there are herbicide issues. I had a tomato come in that was very distorted, and also I had a amelanchier sample come in where it looked like it had been given a dose of both a growth regulator and probably some other active ingredient as well. And then a watermelon sample that had what we thought might be poor pollination, blossom end rot, but we also were able to isolate some pythium from some of the fruits, and that can cause a fruit rot. So it's kind of been a mixed bag. It's been an interesting week. Questions?
This is Jill from Outagamy. What did you say was the cause of the necrotic spots with yellow rings?
That was a Pseudomonas. It's a type of bacterium on the ginkgo tree.
Yeah,
that's a Pseudomonas that we see. And those sorts of symptoms are very typical of bacterial leaf diseases. You'll oftentimes see a necrotic area with a small or large yellow halo. So if you see those sort of symptoms, that oftentimes indicates a bacterial problem.
Okay, and that can be on any number of species of trees?
Well, there are a lot of different types of Pseudomonas leaf spots. It's just that we tend to see this one on, it's one of the few diseases that I see on ginkgo. That seems to be a pretty tough tree. And it isn't a serious problem. It's just worth noting because, again, I don't see a lot of diseases on ginkgo in general.
Okay, so I've just seen it, what seems like that, on a number of maples.
What you're probably seeing with the yellow spots is probably tar spot. I've seen a lot of that on the trees, starting on the trees in Madison, and that'll start out as kind of a yellowish area. And if you take a magnifying glass and look in the center, you'll probably see a little black tarry spot, and that's the start of the fungus fruiting, and that will get larger and larger. you'll actually get many, many, many of those form in that yellow area, and eventually they will coalesce into a single large spot. But particularly on Norway maple, it's been a problem the last couple of years, and I've got tons of it on my Norways in my neighborhood.
Thanks.
Hey, Brian, this is Vijay.
Hi, Vijay.
I noticed a crabapple here at the Extension Grounds. It's a golden raindrop. It's okay. A mature crabapple tree. And this year, unusually, one of the branch, it's a fairly large-sized branch, suddenly died back. It leafed out, it flowered out really well, mm-hmm. and it collapsed. And the whole branch turned out to be completely brown. Okay. And I didn't suspect any, you know, I looked around the base of the tree, as was on the trunk, to see if there's any sign of girdling root, happened by either by bunnies or by wolves, or even by girdling root, you know, the tree seems to be, doesn't show any signs or symptoms of those things. Mm-hmm. So the only possible thing that I'm suspecting may be a fire blight, but I never seen a fire blight taking down an entire branch. It's a large, fairly large-sized branch like that.
Yeah, I would expect more of a progression for that particular disease, starting at the tip and going uh-huh. back. And so what I would be inclined to look for would be some other sort of canker disease that's lower down on the branch, so one of the fungal cankers.
Okay.
It may have gotten established enough that it's eventually girdled that branch and caused it to collapse.
Okay. So I might able to see some sort of like a sunken depression or maybe some sort of like a discoloration.
Sometimes those cankers can be quite subtle, though. So, oftentimes we'll see things that will come in where I don't see a real distinct sunken area. But if I incubate, then all of a sudden you'll get fungal fruiting bodies of one or more of the canker fungi that will start to pop out of the wood.
Okay.
So you may or may not see a distinct canker on the branch.
Okay. So, Brian, do you see a lot of correlations between the last year's drought condition kind of inducing these cankers to be more prevalent this year?
I've always observed that, in general, I tend to see an uptick in canker submissions after we've had trees that are under a variety of stresses. And so, in general, yes, I have no formal experimental information that indicates that that's the case. This is just based on observations that I've made over the years. So mm-hmm. I do think that oftentimes when trees go under stress, that tends to make them more prone to some types of canker diseases. I think, and I was expecting more canker sorts of problems coming into the clinic this year because of the drought last year.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Brian, this is Barb. Any follow-up on the hickory?
I haven't even called yet on that one. I'm kind of waiting until next week when my other contact for the Dane County sample gets back. He's on vacation. I kind of want those submitted around the same time. So I'll call early in the week. We did do a PCR on the tissue that we had. It came back negative, but we do want to follow up with a fresher sample and also some roots.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, and then the other thing, following up with you, Vijay, in terms of what you've been seeing on your maple trees, I did have another sample that came into the clinic more locally from Dane County that had an odd section of the tree, a branch that was, it wasn't totally dead, but it had reduced leaf growth, and the leaves were kind of in tufts. And what was odd was that it was a Norway maple, and the leaves didn't look like a Norway maple on this tree. I mean, you could find leaves of the branch that had the typical Norway shape, but there are other ones that, instead of being kind of the typical five-lobed, were three-lobed on the same branch, and the branch vigor was very, very poor, and when I looked at the leaves, it looked as though there might be some mosaic issues on those leaves, and so I was wondering a little bit about a viral infection that at least at this point is locally affecting the branch in this particular tree. The leaves were kind of distorted. There was kind of a mosaic pattern to some of the leaves, and it made me just wonder about that. And when you're looking at any of those maples, again, watch the kind of the branches that haven't died back, the ones that are attached. See if you see any signs of weird leaf shape and mosaic symptoms. It was a very subtle mosaic, very small kind of lighter colored patches. So watch mm-hmm. for that, and we can take a look when I'm up there as well. But I didn't see any of that on the branches that Glenn brought back, but it's something just to watch for.
Sure, Brian. I haven't come across those kind of symptoms, but I'll keep an eye on to it.
Yeah.
But I did have some couple of calls again this week regarding to the sudden decline of maple, Norway maple in particular, again this week. So
Yeah, keep me informed, and keep, if you have other materials and want to try to get them down to me, we'll take a look again to see what we can find.
Sure, Brian. We'll do that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Brian? Okay, well, how about we move on to Phil?
Okay, well, much like Brian, I mean, really diverse. You know, I'm still running about 120 samples a week, so that's about as crazy as it tends to get. The comment on the black flies, they're very unpredictable. I don't know any weather pattern, hot, dry, wet, whatever, that influences it, mainly because they are stream and river breeders, which I think is a more stable environment, both temperature-wise and moisture-wise. What complicates the story is it is a family of well over 24 species in the state. And so what we're getting is species hatch after species hatch, which isn't typical of every year, but is not that unusual. Many of them are bird biters, so they will not bite you, but they will still buzz around your head. And then there are some that will pick on people, so you can get every combination depending where you're located. Real trend of the wasp and bees are now becoming numerous, so I'm starting to get those calls of the ground nesting yellow jackets and bumblebee problems. Did get one sample of what I assume was a cicada killer, but the image was not clear enough up VJ's way in Brown County, and I sent the cicada killer bulletin to the person and said, could you please verify, because this, as far as I would be aware of, would be a county record, but they did not get back to me. It's also getting to be that time of the year that spiders become more numerous, so we're seeing lots of little spiders coming in and the like. But with that, I'd open it up to questions so that we can get on and have Christelle talk about what's going on with spotted wing.
Just one thing, Phil. We're really noticing a lack of pollinators up this direction, up in Marinette, O'Connell, and Florence. Is that something that you're seeing statewide, or is that just more localized?
I think it's generally statewide. I remember walking in the Arboretum during lilac bloom and not seeing anything, not a single bee of one sort or another. And, you know, you can just kind of speculate, much like we've seen with the butterflies, is the stress of the drought is kind of going over. And I'm sure the coolness slowed them down. You'd think some of those might start recovering, but it doesn't seem to be a good year for bees.
Any other questions for Phil? Okay, well, then, we have a special guest today. Christelle is here to talk about spotted wing Drosophila, which seems to have made it through the winter, I guess, and doesn't seem to be, at least in my area, quite as prevalent as last year when everybody had it, but it would be great to get an update on this little pest and what we should do and what the latest research is. So, Christelle, can you go ahead and tell us about SWD?
Hello, everybody. I'll be happy to talk to you about where we're at with spotted-wing Drosophila. The question I have, first of all, is do you guys want a background on, like, the biology of spotted wing, how to identify it and stuff like that, or not? Because I don't know where everybody's at with that.
I say yes.
Okay. So I'll start from scratch, and hopefully it won't be too long. So just a little bit first on how to what's spotted-wing Drosophila. So it's invasive species that comes from Japan. Its scientific name is Drosophila suzukii. It was introduced in 2008 in California and moved up the West Coast very quickly after that. It was found in 2009 in Florida and moved up quickly. We found it in Wisconsin, a couple specimens in 2010. 2011, not so much out here, and then in 2012, like you all know probably, the populations were very, very high, and there were very high damage in raspberries and probably some other crops, too. And I wasn't here yet. I started in October, so I came right after that big spotted-wing Drosophila explosion. So as far as identifying spotted-wing Drosophila, the males have a dot on each wing, one dot. It's not at the very tip of the wing. It's on the upper side of the wing, and it's pretty big. There's some flies that will have a tiny dot at the very tip of the wing. The spot is a little bigger than it's bigger than that, but it can get really faint if the specimen is old. So it can be a little problematic to find, but it should be kind of easily recognizable from the spots on the males. The males also have two dark bands on each of their forelegs. So their legs are yellowish, and they'll have two dark bands, some combs of black hair that are characteristic also of spotted-wing Drosophila. The females do not have the spots on the wings, so they're not easily identified just like that with just by the naked eye. they have serrated ovipositor. And what it is, the ovipositor is the egg-laying structure, and it's a very unique ovipositor in the sense that it has very predominant rows, two rows of teeth that will cut a slit in the skin of the fruit and allow the female to attack fruit that's perfectly sound and barely ripening, and they can lay their eggs under the skin of the fruit. So that's the characteristic for the female, which is really hard to see. The fly itself is a 16th to an eighth of an inch long. And like I said, the female is a lot harder to identify. So the best is to do that under a microscope. 115 one is pretty easy to identify because that ovipositor is very unique, very darker. The teeth are very sharp. I mean, it really looks like a pretty nice saw, with two saws actually. They have two rows of those teeth. So as far as the life cycle, they do best at 65 to 70 Fahrenheit. There's about a 12-day generation time, and that depends a little bit on the weather. The female can lay up to 350 eggs. She'll lay one to three eggs at a time in a fruit. The eggs will hatch within 1 to 3 days, and the larvae will take 5 to 7 days to go through three larval instars. So you'll have a very small instar, medium, and bigger. The bigger one is about an eighth of an inch long, and then they'll pupate and come out as adults. Please do not hesitate to interrupt me if you have questions as I go along. The females can lay eggs one day after they emerge. So we're expecting, but not sure at all, 10 maybe to 12 generations here, possibly less. But there's no distinct generation, so they'll keep on emerging and continuing their life cycle. So you won't see any difference between generations. So it will be hard to tell if there's any how many generations we have here. So because of that ovipositor, that egg-laying structure, the females are able to attack ripening and ripe fruit. So they don't need to wait like other Drosophila for the fruit to get damaged or to be overripe to attack the fruit. They can move in like now in raspberry that's barely turning color, that's barely not even ripe yet. So you might already know that, but as far as the crops that are at higher risks are the soft berries. So raspberries are obviously one of the very preferred hosts. So are blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, cherries, nectarines, peaches. Apparently they're being found in peaches also. But the main ones will be for us raspberry, blueberries, cherries, maybe not as much, strawberries. I was just talking to Hannah Barak in North Carolina. They don't think that they're as susceptible to spreadwing Drosophila as raspberry or blueberry. There's been talk about apple, grape, like peaches and those. They're probably at more moderate risk. Grapes, it might vary on the variety of grapes. So some might be more susceptible than others, and we'll be looking at that with one of my students here. Apples, only if the fruit is compromised already, if it's cracked, the skin is cracked, or it's overripe. So it shouldn't be a problem for apple growers. One thing that's important to note is the alternate host. Spotwing Drosophila was told by Rufus Isaac in Michigan, if it's a soft fruit, spotwing Drosophila will be found there. So anything like elderberry, pokeweed, dogwood, honeysuckle, all those can be potential alternate hosts for spotwing Drosophila. So if you have raspberries, strawberries, and you're looking at how the fruit will look like after the egg is laying there, you'll see a spot that's kind of sunken a little bit, and it will look soft and maybe lighter colored. And if you look very close, you might be able to see the egg underneath the surface of the skin will have two breathing tubes that come out so the egg can breathe. So it will come out of on the outside of the fruit. And so I haven't seen it yet, but supposedly you're able to see those breathing tubes, so very white, very short filaments that are coming out of the berry. The fruit will begin to soften as the eggs, the larvae feed on them, and you'll get scarring of the tissue, the berries will collapse. And the berries will become juicy, so you'll get a lot of juice coming out of those. As far as them being in Wisconsin or not, we don't know if they overwinter here. Most likely, it would be my gut feeling right now, they do. What I'm finding out is that any state that was hoping that they wouldn't be overwintering their state because it's too cold all have spotwing Drosophila that they are convinced are overwintering. There's not real research to check if they're overwintering, so the only way people know is if they're catching adults in the wintertime in, like, more southern states, then they have a pretty good indication that they have them all the time. The adult is the stage that's overwintering. The eggs will die, the larvae will die with cold temperatures, but the adults can go in protected area and survive the winter. So even if we did get any kind of mortality in the winter, we might still have some flies that make it through the winter because they're in protected areas. So more likely, the population starts very low with very few flies if they're overwintering. Then as the temperature increases, the population will increase. But the very hot temperatures or colder temperatures away from that 70 degrees by 10 or 15 degrees will kind of slow down the populations. Even the higher degrees, people are thinking that they are not doing well at that 80, 90 degrees. So the population will still stay low, probably in the summertime. And then as the fall comes along and the temperatures come back down, that's when they're really, the populations can explode. So as far as checking for larvae, to see if you have larvae in your fruit, you can put the fruit that looks infested, that looks compromised, in Ziploc bags and add a salt and water mixture and let that sit in the bag, in a Ziploc bag, and then the larvae should float in there, and there'll be those white little larvae. So if the fruit is intact fruit and it's not, like, overripe, most likely it is spotted wing Drosophila. If you want to know if it is spotted wing Drosophila, instead of putting the water and salt mixture in that Ziploc bag, you can just let leave the fruit in the bag without anything and let the adults emerge. You can then put the bag in the freezer and try to ID the flies yourself, or you can send them to either Phil or myself and we can look at them and let you know if they are spotted wing Drosophila. At this stage right now, most likely everything we're seeing is spotted wing Drosophila. And Phil, I'll have to ask you about that on how to identify larvae. Obviously, we can identify adults, but if you want to pitch in and talk about how to identify larvae,
sure.
Phil, can you do that?
Well, you're pretty sure it's Drosophila if you look at the very flat back end of the creature. There's two little button-shaped things we call spiracles that the insect breeds with, and what's characteristic of Drosophila larvae as the genus is that they're on little pedestals, so they kind of stick out, where most other flies, the little button-shaped spiracles are flat on the back of the abdomen. The problem is that because there's 119 species of Drosophila, I don't know of any way to speciate them, but as Christelle said, if it is just coloring fruit and you're finding larvae, it's got to be spotted wing. Where we get a little bit more iffy is if it is a very decayed fruit, where we would have the other species that often show in, then you start to get questionable if it's truly spotted wing or somebody else. But you know, considering everything that's going on, you're finding maggots and fruit that's just starting to ripen, it's going to be spotted wing as long as you see that, they said, those little pedestal-like projections.
Thanks, Phil. Okay, so now moving on to some kind of management approach here. So the first step for spotted wing Drosophila and for most insects is monitoring. We want to know when they show up, where they show up, and if they show up, if they are spotted wing Drosophila. Of course, now I don't know if people are still interested in monitoring, but some growers might still be interested if they haven't found anything. So if people ask you how to monitor for spotted wing Drosophila, we use 32-ounce cups. Daily cups, clear plastic. You melt or drill holes at the upper rim of the cup, about 10 holes. What we're finding now is best to do 3/8 of an inch hole. They're smaller holes, so you'll get less of the bigger flies going. As bait, we can put either an inch of apple cider vinegar, but I can tell you right now that I'm highly disappointed with it. That's what we've been using for some of our work, and it's definitely not the best bait to use. We're testing baits right now, and I'll give an update on that at the end of the season of what we're finding, and we're doing this with 9 other states, so we'll have an update on what's the best out of those baits we're trying. The one that people have been using that's still simple enough is a mix of active dry yeast, sugar, and water. And if you want the recipe, it's 1 tablespoon of active dry yeast, 4 tablespoons of sugar, and 12 ounces of water. And you will put in about an inch at the bottom of the cup. And that's been shown to be better than the apple cider vinegar. And I will tell you at the end, but we have experience with that now. That's really showing it's better. However, I've also been talking with Hannah Barak this morning, and I guess there's no bait that will really tell you when the flies are there necessarily before they're in the fruit. So none of the baits we have right now are good enough to warn us of the arrival of the adults before they lay eggs. And it's actually not extremely surprising. The adults are overwintering, and the females can lay eggs as soon as they emerge. So they're even could be mated before they go into the winter. If they're not, they're ready to mate right away and lay eggs right away. So it's kind of hard to have a good monitoring device here. But we're trying that. So if people are asking you about it, I would recommend the yeast and sugar. You want to put a drop of soap in there, unscented soap, because if not, the flies can crawl out. The soap will break the surface tension of the liquid, of the yeast and sugar, and same with the apple cider vinegar, so the flies will drown. You want to hang the traps in the shade and in the fruiting area, so in the canopy, usually, of where you have your fruit. And these flies like shade, so you want to put them in the shade. You want to change your bait weekly. When you dispose of the bait, you don't want to be just pouring that out where your traps are, because then your trap is not going to be as effective because you're going to have your bait on the ground there and the flies are going to go to that. So you want to get rid of the bait away from the fruiting area. And then the recommendation I found so far is 1 trap per acre for vinegar, maybe 1 for 5 acres for the yeast and sugar mix. They're easy to maintain, so it's not necessarily to go by that, but that would be a minimum if you want to monitor for this. Best detection would be now, as the fruit is ripening. Once you've detected spotted wing Drosophila and you have the fruit that's susceptible, is when you want to take action against spotted wing Drosophila. Obviously, it's an invasive species. We don't know much about it, so there's a lot of work that's being done, but not a lot of work that's actually well spread out to the whole community. We don't have a lot of stuff that's published yet. So right now, there's no action threshold for spotted wing Drosophila. The threshold right now is if your fruit is susceptible and you have spotted wing Drosophila in your crop, start taking action, start increasing your monitoring intensity to really know where you have spotted wing Drosophila. You might have it in some spots and on others, so you really want to increase your monitoring. Check your traps more often than once a week, maybe twice a week, to really check how the population is increasing. There's a couple cultural controls that I'll talk about in a minute. And then you want to also use insecticides right away. So from when you detect them and the fruit is susceptible all the way until harvest is completed, taking into account your pre-harvest intervals. For cultural controls, one is I haven't had any growers that were very excited about it, but it's netting. So that could work for smaller patches of strawberries. So at least for home gardeners, that would be an option, is to put a netting above your crop. So obviously for strawberry, it seems a lot more practical. And then you just have a mesh size that's small enough that the flies wouldn't go through. So that would have to be applied before you have flies. Otherwise, you're trapping the flies under the netting with your fruit. You then want to schedule timely harvest. And that's key for any kind of spotted wing Drosophila management, any crop that you have, especially raspberries, those berries that are continuously producing fruit. Harvesting every other day or so is the best way to go because you don't let the fruit ripen too much on your crop and you remove as you go all the fruit that's good. And at the same time, the best would be to have 2 buckets, one for the good fruit and one for the overripe and infested fruit. So you don't leave the fruit in your patch, you remove it. So you don't let the flies develop on the ground. If the fruit drops, the flies are just continuing the development and you're then having a perfect site for increasing the population. So this is very important. Schedule timely harvest and remove all the fruit that's ripe from the crop and get rid of it. For disposing off of the fruit, there's a couple options. So if you don't have a lot of fruit, you just bag the fruit, seal it tight, and leave it in the sun, and it will solarize the fruit and the larvae that are inside. If you have a lot of fruit, you can put the fruit in a sunny location on the ground and cover it with pure plastic. You secure it on the side with dirt, so you make sure that the flies can't escape, and again, they'll solarize there in the sun. If people want to bury the fruit, you have to go at least 2 feet deep. There's been some suggestion that if it's not deep enough, the flies will still come out. Also, make sure to tell people to not compost their fruit. Composting the fruit will actually probably help quickening the larval development in those warmer areas in the compost pile. So composting is really not an option. Some people are telling me they are feeding them to their chickens. I don't know if it would be a good option, but I would guess it would be. But I don't have any experience on feeding infested berries to chickens and making sure there's no populations that come out there. But so, yeah, you want to solarize berry and not compost your fruit. So once we go into insecticides, there are a couple options. There are two insecticides that are organic approved, and then there's a list of insecticides. So what I'm going to do very soon here is send out, and I'll make sure to send it out to all the county agents, recommendations per crop. So I'm going to do it for raspberry, cherry, strawberry, and blueberry. I have a list of insecticides that other people in other states have tested, and I'm trying to compile all of that per crop. There are quite a few. People have been working a lot of insecticides. What's very important with those kind of crops, such as raspberries and blueberries, especially when they are pick-your-own, is the pre-harvest intervals. So those that I'm putting out there are those that people in other states, scientists have worked on, that have shorter pre-harvest intervals. So I'll send that out to you. What I wanted to mention as far as what we're doing, we have a monitoring project that's been going on since April, May, depending on the county, with multiple growers and county agents. We're using the apple cider vinegar. That's why I'm very disappointed with it, because I was hoping we would catch flies before we get them in the fruit, but it's overlapping right now, so it's not working out really well. It's working out at telling us, but not at warning us ahead of time. From one of our students, Emma Pelton here, is working on a landscape ecology with Spodumene drosophila. So she's looking at the effect of woods near your raspberry patch to see if there's any differences if you have wooded areas nearby, because people are thinking that they're overwintering in the wooded areas, then maybe you will have more spotted winged drosophila. What's been interesting from that study, we don't know yet anything about it, but I asked her to use a yeast and sugar bait because it was shown to be better than the apple cider vinegar. And she's the one with her traps. She has traps in the whole southern part of the state. She's the one that has been able to tell us ahead of time that there was spotted winged drosophila. So that's why the yeast and sugar is better. It catches more flies and earlier than the apple cider vinegar. One thing I forgot to mention, by the way, on the insecticides is the spray intervals are very, very short on these. What people are recommending is spraying every 4 or 5 days. So that's not very practical for a lot of growers that are pick-your-own, which they're not per se organic, but they never sprayed their blueberries or their raspberries. And they're stuck now with having to spray, which is, there's no other option. I mean, really, there's nothing we can do to control, even in organic settings, people have to spray in order to control and have some kind of fruit at the end of the season. What I wanted to give you an update now, and if you guys want to pitch in there, the confirmed counties we have right now for spotted winged drosophila are Crawford County, Vernon County, Sauk County, and Iowa County. We have suspected spotted winged drosophila either in the fruit with larvae or adults in Jefferson County, Washburn County, Bayfield, Pierce. I noted earlier somebody said Wood County, but I missed some other places. So if you want to give me your county so I can update that on our website, that would be great.
Yeah. Christelle, you can add Door County. And I think the most interesting one is if Barb does get a confirmation in Kenosha, because, again, last year we didn't see the activity there.
So that's confirmed in Kenosha?
No, it's not. It's in the larval stage right now. So
I heard you. Yeah, yeah. I heard you guys, but I couldn't catch the county names for some of you. So
yeah. Okay. This is Barb in Kenosha. So,
so it came in
Tuesday or Wednesday morning. The larvae were very small, so now I can see them, but I've got them right now in the Ziploc bag waiting for adult emergence.
Okay, great. If you want to keep me posted, that would be great so I can update the website.
Okay, yeah, I will be sending it to Phil.
Thank you.
Or one of you for confirmation.
Yeah, and that's fine. We're in touch.
Okay, good.
Great. Any other counties where you are suspecting spotted winged drosophila? Okay. Okay. So what I'm going to do, like I said, I'm going to make those recommendations per crop. So most of the bulk of it will be the same for each crop because I'm giving a little update on how to identify, you know, pretty much what I just told you today. But at the end, I'll have the specific insecticides for each of those crops. So that's going to be updated. But what you want to be looking at is our website. So it's a website that was created back in last fall before I started by P.J. Leash. He works with Chris Williamson here. And everybody was pitching in and filling in for, I guess, me now, but at the time for the new fruit crop entomologist. And so P.J. put together a website that I then took over. That website is, well, I wouldn't spell it out because you'll have it in the links of Brian's, I don't forget what he calls it on that website, the horticulture update, the information, like extra information. I'll have the link there. But if you type in pretty much Spodumene Drosophila, Wisconsin, it should show up. On there, there's all that information on how to identify, how to monitor, how to manage the pests. I'll put any kind of update on there. So we're updating every week for the counties that are either confirmed or suspected. What I will also give Brian is a presentation I have, and if you guys want to use my presentation, I'm way more than happy to share that with you. Anything you need for informing people, I can give you all the information you need on slides, PowerPoint, or send you, you know, PDFs or whatever you need. Please don't hesitate to ask me. On that same website, we also have a tab there on that monitoring project that I mentioned in multiple counties. So we go all the way to Bayfield and all the way down to Dane County. So we're covering quite a range. We're in Door County, Pierce. We have, I think, 18 counties that are represented. So there's the updates on that website also. And it's called the 2013 Monitoring Project. On the updates that we're giving of where they're found, we're combining the monitoring project with Emma's landscape ecology study because she's finding them, like I said, with her yeast and sugar. So we're updated of what we find so far. It doesn't matter where that comes from. I think that's all I have, so I'll be more than happy to take questions if you guys have any.
Christelle, do you know, I think I heard you write that it's like one trap per acre. So does that mean that these critters can fly quite a ways, or is there any indication of how far they fly? So, you know, or do they blow in the wind, or how do they disperse or move about?
So it's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that. How far they fly, I don't know. I'm sure they move around with the winds if there's strong winds. I don't know how far they fly, but those traps are actually not that good at attracting them from far. So it's really just a recommendation if you want to know if you have them in your fruit. But it definitely wouldn't work for a whole acre to have one trap. So it's the minimum recommendation right there. As far as how far they move, I really don't know. I think it can move quite a ways, but I really don't have a number for that. So, Phil, would you have any suggestions on that or anybody else?
Well, I mean, the only comment, the wind can be amazing. We got that African fruit fly out of Florida up here last year in October. And so, yeah, I you would suspect, even though the initial thing might be blow in now, I mean, it's very intriguing to me, and I'm sure Christelle too, is that a lot of the places that had problems last year have problems again, which really does underline, I think, the overwintering issue.
Yeah, my gut feeling is really telling me they're overwintering. I mean, if we were seeing anything, they wouldn't be showing up everywhere like that at the same time if they weren't overwintering. They would be in one area. Right now, what we're finding is within a week or two, they're everywhere. So that to me, and not in the north yet, or North Door County, those counties that are a little different in the weather, but I bet they're overwintering here. And I keep thinking that if they die over the winter and you have 100 flies and only two make it, that's enough to start a new population in every, you know, in every crop or places where they were present. In all the states where they have little milder weather, they catch flies in the wintertime, all the way up to Washington State. So my gut feeling is really that they're here and they're here to stay.
And then they pupate in the berry, like once the berry would fall to the ground or something. They don't actually, like, burrow into the soil at all, right?
No, but they can come out of the berry. So I don't know if they are I don't think they're going outside the berry. They can pupate in and out of the berry. So some of them will crawl out and pupate, but some pupation can happen inside the berry. So they don't need to go in the soil to pupate.
And these berries that we have sitting on our desk rotting and stuff, waiting for the adults to emerge, that's okay that they're rotting?
Well, the one thing that's not okay is if you have a lot of liquid. So I'm learning that right now, because what will happen is the larvae can drown in the liquid, and then the fermentation in there could kill them from all the alcohol that's in there. So are you having a lot of liquid in there, in your bag?
Yeah, actually, as I look at it, I do notice that. Well, I should put a...
That could be a problem. So you might want to poke a couple holes in there, but then I don't know if you're going to lose a lot of larvae. So maybe put them, like... Suspend your Ziploc bag and put some holes, like very fine holes, for the liquid to drain, maybe.
Okay.
And, I'm learning that, like, today, pretty much. I talked to Hannah Borak down in North Carolina, and she has more experience, and they struggled with that. So now what they're doing is they have one of those plastic containers that you buy at the store, and they put mesh at the bottom. They cut off the bottom, and they put mesh, and they suspend them so the liquid drains out. So it's a little more complicated than just putting them in a Ziploc bag, I guess. They're also finding out that if they don't pull the pupae out of the fruit, they have less adults that will emerge. So
it's quite common for the species I see in restaurants and whatnot for the larvae to migrate out of the food source to somewhat higher, drier, and pupate there.
Yep.
So I wonder if again, this may be a little bit of the artifact.
That could be.
Well, this is great. Any other questions for Christelle or Phil about the spotted wing Drosophila? Well, thanks, Christelle. That was very thorough, and I think we all fully understand this little pest now. So thanks for joining us and giving us that report.
Thank you very much, you guys. And like I said, do not hesitate to contact me if you have any questions, if you need any material or anything. I'll be more than happy to share that.
Great. Thanks. Well, let's start wrapping up here then. Any other questions for anyone or any announcements that any of the agents want to make or specialists want to make?
This is Kim in Winnebago. I'd just like to make the announcement that next Friday is the early bird deadline for our fall workshops that we're going to have in Winnebago, Allegheny, and Brown counties, where Phil and Brian will be speaking.
Okay, any other announcements or questions? Well, then we will wrap it up. Next week will be August 2nd, and George from Columbia County will be the host, and the special guest will be Mark Dwyer talking about shade perennials. So with that, thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend, and hopefully spotted wing Drosophila will not invade all of the raspberries in your counties. And have a great weekend, and we'll talk again next week.